You've decided you're ready to become a parent, and suddenly you're overwhelmed with people who feel they have the right to inform you on the correct way to conceive, give birth, what fears you should have, and the proper way to parent. How do you filter through the opinions? How do you know what's trustworthy information and what's a myth or just plain outdated? Welcome to the Birth Ease Podcast. Join your host, Michelle Smith, and her guests as they cut through the noise and fear by sharing valuable tips, tools, and proven methods that help you connect with your own inner wisdom as you navigate the sacred journey that is pregnancy, birth, and parenthood in a more relaxed and confident manner. This podcast does not constitute, nor is it intended, as medical advice.
Hello, Birthies families. Welcome to your reprieve from the noise and the stress that can often accompany pregnancy, birth, and parenthood. I'm your host, Michelle Smith. In today's episode, I'm so excited and grateful to have back with me once again, Kathy Bradley. Kathy has been a leader in the maternal health field for 30 years. She is an internationally board-certified lactation consultant, and we will be having a conversation about the ways to reduce fear and stress surrounding the breastfeeding experience. Welcome, Kathy. I'm so excited and grateful to have you here with me today.
I love to be on these podcasts with you. I just love time with you. We think in the same vein, and we enjoy moms, babies, and birth, so it's a good gathering.
Yes, yes. Thank you, it is. I'd like to discuss some of the ways that families can prevent or mitigate some of the stress and fear that surrounds breastfeeding. Sometimes that can start even before a mom has given birth to her baby. And those first couple weeks are hard, as you well know, for many moms, not all moms, but it's that adjustment period and that learning period. Could you please, I know it's a big topic, but just dive in and share some of those ways to reduce the stress.
Okay, I've got my deep gear on today. I would have to say, and yes, as a lactation consultant, I've been working with moms and babies. I think we're at upwards of 30 years now, which just totally blows my mind. But yeah, I do get the mamas and the families. That mom's major concern isn't really about birth, it's about breastfeeding, and that always surprises me. And I have to say, first and foremost, what creates, I believe, the anxiety is the pressure that we put on ourselves, the unknown. We're in a culture now, of course, we're very social. Obviously, most people listening to this recording are going to be probably on their handheld device for the most part. And we're in a society, in a time of culture where women don't trust their abilities. Yes. When I taught at Winnie Palmer, which is second largest volume hospital in the United States, at an average of 48 babies being delivered a day, and I taught the breastfeeding classes there, my openers, if you will, as we got into the classes, I would say, isn't it interesting that you've paid money to come listen and learn about something that is so innately human to feed your babies? If we look, people, you know, you might have had sex education in junior high school and you learned about the birds and the bees and how babies happen. But the actual making of a baby, most people don't go to class for that. It's just organically happened between you and your partner. And yet, without you knowing, you grew your baby, right? I mean, without consciously saying, okay, today we've got to move blood. Our babies just grow in our bellies because our bodies are designed to do it. And when they come out of our bellies, we're capable of breastfeeding. The majority of women are capable of breastfeeding their baby. If that process didn't work, our society would have ended a long time ago. Right. And yet people are coming to class to learn how to breastfeed because our society, our culture has created enough question and ability that they're not really sure they're able to do it. And I always say, do you expect to come to this hospital and have your baby? And they're all like, yes. I'm like, well, why wouldn't you expect to feed your baby, that you could feed your baby? And another thing is how we phrase and the power of our words. So I would ask the question, how many of you, quote, are going to try to breastfeed your baby? And I'd ask for people to raise hands. If you've thought that, I'm going to try to feed my baby, I'm breastfeeding my baby, raise your hand. And almost, I mean, just, I did it in all my classes because I wanted people to see that they weren't alone in questioning their ability, but also to see that the majority of the class had that thought. And really and truly, if we lived in a culture where everybody breastfed and everybody just did, we wouldn't even question our abilities. So answering your question of the stress and all that, I have to take a step back to the root of where I think a lot of this comes from. Now, yes, are babies fed frequently? Yeah, and babies can have to eat every hour, hour and a half, up to every 2 to 3 hours as newborns. Is that taxing on a family? Yes. We live in a culture where everything is, don't put your baby in bed, don't sleep with your baby. If we look at how moms and babies function for hundreds of years, there weren't cribs. Babies slept with mom. I know that's a controversial subject, but what I'm trying to point out to the listeners is that, in essence, our culture has created a division from our babies and division from us really believing in our body's ability. So once again, I'm going to go back to the brain, back to our thinking processes, back to what our belief systems are, even about feeding babies. The step one of beginning to look at why is it considered stressful and why is it for some it is and for some it's not. And I'm just talking overall. I mean, obviously there's difference if there's truly feeding issues. If we have nipple soreness, cracked and bleeding, tongue ties, mom having a hard time producing milk. Those are true structural things that we need to address.
I don't think we have enough modeling in regards to breastfeeding. Mm-hmm. We don't. Also, you know, back to your point, we are mammals and we're nesting mammals. And most mammals, when they have given birth, they're nesting with their babies. Their babies are right there with them continuously. But our culture has created this paradigm that we're not supposed to hold our babies too much. We're supposed to set them down. I remember once your amazing colleague, Annette Leary, we were chatting one day and she said, I can tell if there's going to be, I forget exactly how she put it, but I can tell if there's a disconnect with the breastfeeding. If a mama walks in, the baby's in the car seat carrier, she sets the baby down by the front of the room because it was a narrow, remember, it was that narrow hallway-like room, and then comes and sits in the chair by me. She's not even connected to her baby. So part of our practices, I think, are separating moms and babies. And so many women have to get back to work. We don't give women time to even initiate breastfeeding practices sometimes.
In my class, and these classes had like 45 people in them at a time. And I would always ask, how many of you have seen a baby actually breastfeeding at the breast ever, right? And then I'd say, how many people in the last year? How many people in the last 3 months? How many people in the last month? How many people in the last week? And what the point I was getting is very few and far between. So that we're reading everywhere and we're hearing, we're getting the messages in our culture that breastfeeding is best, but it's not being modeled. So in an unconscious, in a nonverbal way, we are getting two different messages that are diabolically opposed. So if we went back 100, 200 years, where our communities lied, we breastfed our babies just like all mammalian species suckle their young. That is what they do. And I love the pictures that go back into like the 1800s,
yes, and
early 1900s. And you see all kinds of cultures around the world, babies at the breast, and it's not a big deal. Right. And then all of a sudden we've come into the 1950s, the 1960s, 1970s, all of a sudden, you know, we have this creation of alternative breast milk known as formulas. And all of a sudden we see this huge decline in the breastfeeding rates. And I think part of what that is, I don't know if you really want to go into this podcast, I can address like how and why we came from where we are from that time era. But women just really don't believe they have the ability. They don't trust their bodies that they have the ability to breastfeed. And then secondary to that, if they do run into problems, where are they going to get evidence-based, non-judgmental support?
Right.
And there are times when I have to have that discussion with the mama that formula is what we need to give this baby right now until we can get milk supply up, get an alternative milk supply and do something. And people are always very surprised about that, that they think all lactation consultants are against formula. And it's like, no, baby needs nutrition. We need to be realistic about what we're dealing with here.
Right. I agree. Sometimes women do have difficulties breastfeeding, and having a very skilled lactation consultant can make all the difference. And I feel like we get very polarized sometimes. In the 50s, breastfeeding was looked down upon as inferior to the science of formula, and it sounds so terrible, but this was the thinking, that only poor people breastfeed their baby. And how quickly all of that changed, uh-huh, how we breastfeed within a couple generations. Uh-huh. I remember going up to St. Augustine and going to the Our Lady of La Leche. I'd never been, and seeing that statue of Mother Mary breastfeeding baby Jesus from the 1600s. What happened that we have so much shame, mm-hmm, that we are no longer able to breastfeed our babies in public? And I think that's part of the problem too, is there's too much shame, too much fear, too many family members that have never breastfed telling women that they're going to starve their baby.
Yes. That's a big one, isn't it?
It is. It is. Yep. And my mom was a nursing professor, and she was a nurse and did mother baby and did her dissertation on breastfeeding, actually. And she was so funny because she would always say, if God wanted you to know how many ounces of milk were coming out of your breast, he would have put a gauge on there so that you could read it. Mm-hmm. But instead, he wants you to follow the cues of your baby, mm-hmm, connect with your baby, and look for those cues that your baby is well fed.
Right. What's interesting is the practice, the specialty practice of pediatricians, right? So we go back the late 1800s, early 1900s, when physicians started becoming more prevalent. We began to see more specialty pediatrics, you know, all the different areas of medicine, instead of just old doc down at the office that treated what we would know today as family practice physician. What a lot of people don't realize is pediatrics, where it all came out of, is when babies were having issues and their mamas, on rare occasion, cannot produce adequate amounts of milk, the doctors would start creating, quote, formulas and specialize in what the baby needs. Like my mom tells stories, my mom's late 70s, she tells that when her sister was born and her mother passed away, she had to use Karo syrup, carnation milk. I mean, yes. I guess they couldn't afford the formula as we know it today. And so they created something, right? So there were doctors that specialized in nutrition for infants. And that is where the pediatrician actually came out of. That's how they became their own specialty, is specializing in the nutrition of infants.
That's interesting.
It is very interesting. And where formulas, how it came about is during the wars, the men went off to war, and so the women had to go into the factories. And so they had a baby that was suckling at the breast, who was going to feed that baby? And then there were also, at the same time, there were doctors doing research on asthmas in children, and such, and they would take these babies out to the ocean for the day, out into the sea, you know, the saltwater air, to see if they got better breathing treatments. And so they needed to be able to feed these babies. So kind of all around that same time, mm-hmm, is where the quote formulation of formulas or infant nutrition started coming around. And it is historically known that when things like that come about, it's the wealthier that can afford it. Let's face it, if somebody has a Mercedes or a high-end car, those of us that are driving a lesser car, majority of the population is always going to strive to drive that higher car. It's just kind of innate human thing we do. We want bigger, better. And so that's also what happened with women, thought that it was, you had to have money to feed your baby. And so you bought formula. So then we began to see the decline. But thank goodness we're really rebounding and coming back around way more than we were in the 80s and the 90s with breastfeeding. And that's exciting to see more mamas feeding their baby.
Yeah, it really is. When I had my daughter, she's 33, I remember my OB looking at me and my daughter, she was only 6 weeks old, and he said, "You're still breastfeeding that baby. Why aren't you supplementing her yet? Why are you still breastfeeding?" And mm-hmm. I went on to feed her for a year, which back in the 80s was a long wow. time to breastfeed. Yeah.
Closet nurser.
yeah. It was just looked down upon. And mm-hmm. I remember the best thing that happened is we went to the Lake Eola Art Festival, and my little one was crying, and my cousin looked at me and she said, "See that tree over there? You go sit down under that tree and you go feed your baby, and you don't worry about what anybody in this park thinks. You go feed your child." And that was the greatest gift, because I just sat down and fed my baby. And now, and I understand people want modesty, but now we have to have all these cover-ups. And even there was it just tickles me so much, at the Lelechi Shrine, they had a poster of Madonnas for each state in the United States. And for Florida, they had Our Lady of La Leche, but they put a cover-up on her. What? The statue oh, wow. shows her boob, but we cannot possibly show her breast. Years ago, a magazine from Germany showed a mother breastfeeding on the cover.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And I was shocked because you didn't see it. You couldn't show breastfeeding on our covers of our magazines or even in the magazine. So what does that do to our psyche? It adds to that shame.
Right.
It adds to that expectation that the baby's going to be bottle fed. And I just feel like there's too much fear and shame surrounding breastfeeding. It's getting so much better, but it's still there.
Yeah. And even culturally, right? So we still, the mamas that are having babies today, I always talk to them, if I get them prenatally, is to find out from their partner, were they breastfed? The mama who's going to give birth, was she breastfed? What is the belief in the immediate family? Because
right.
that has a lot of power into how or if they will be supported, if there are challenges that come along. You run into a problem and you're worried. And I will tell you, time and time again, study after study, the number one reason women give up breastfeeding is they do not believe they have enough milk for their baby.
Wow. So
ever I teach, ever I work with anybody, I'm always wanting to teach them tools so that they know how to tell their baby's getting enough milk. And for your listening purposes to your audience, it is the diaper output. If we have input, we're going to get output. Okay. So it's going to be number of wet diapers and poops based on how many days old. That's information we can easily get off the internet, most likely to Google, if they don't have a care provider that gives them that information. So when you run into a challenge, who the immediate support is, and that can even be pediatrician, it can be obstetrician, is going to very much impact whether that mom continues on her breastfeeding relationship or not. So the social constructs of what and how we are in our family pods, if you will, can make or break the breastfeeding relationship.
Yes, I agree. And if you're a mama that really wants to breastfeed your baby, when you're choosing your pediatrician, find a pediatrician that is supportive of breastfeeding, because that can make a difference too.
Huge.
You and I both know sometimes moms call you crying because their pediatrician told them this, and mm-hmm. you suggest that they go see a lactation consultant. And it just brings so much relief, because pediatricians, some of them don't have as much knowledge, I guess I want to say.
When you look at resident programs with pediatricians, a lot of them have 4 hours on lactation. There isn't any way that we can begin to educate the pediatrician in school. So often, and here's another thing too, is you get the calls from the mamas that are, you know, the pediatrician, my baby's not growing on the percent of the scale and the height and weight. They're telling me I need to give formula. And one of the first things I'll do is I say, okay, is your baby on cue for a milestones? Is for age, is baby doing what baby's supposed to be doing? Yes. Does baby have the diaper output? Yes. Okay. Then I'll send them, go back to the pediatrician's office, call, and ask him to tell you who is the manufacturer of that clotting graph. We know that breastfed babies grow and have different growth patterns than formula fed babies. And so often formula companies are providing these things free of charge to pediatric offices, which I understand you're trying to keep your costs down. So, hey, if I can get stuff free, then I get it. I get it from a practice management place. But what that simple act of using that growth chart is set for formula fed babies is very different than the breastfed baby. So the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, puts out in the World Health Organization, you can get charts that plot a breastfed baby. So something as simple as that, that most people wouldn't know, you can go from a mom feeling like she's absolutely starving her baby and the worst horrible mom to, oh my gosh, everything's fine. And it was merely just a simple graph could make that much difference. I just literally yesterday was calculating, I have a mom, the 3.5-month-old, and she texted me and said, doctor's saying this. And I said, tell me the birth weight, tell me what his current weight was, how many days old. And I basically started the calculation and came back and said, your baby's gaining over the minimum of what is required from breastfeeding. And she's like, oh, wonderful. Thank God you just put my mind at ease. So it really is important that when you reach out for lactation information, that you hopefully have access to somebody that really knows what they're doing and has a lot of experience. It makes the difference.
It really does. And when mamas are encountering problems, to have a skilled lactation consultant to go to, it can make all the difference, because sometimes we do have issues like inverted nipples or thrush, which is a yeast infection on your nipples, which is horrible. Speaking from experience, if it hadn't been my fourth baby, I would have, as I suffered, my whole audience will know now that I had inverted nipples, right? But it was really difficult with my first and my second. And I had to really work to pull that nipple out to get her to nurse both my first two babies, especially. And, you know, we worked through it and we did it. And I wish I would have had a lactation consultant. It would have made all the difference, I think. And they have better tools and tips nowadays. But getting thrush, which is awful, I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. I thought, oh my gosh, if this was not my fourth child and I did not have years and years of experience breastfeeding, I would quit. I understand why women get so overwhelmed and quit, but then finding help makes such a difference, such a difference.
Yes. And you know, there's a lot of what I call breast practices, kind of along the lines of best practices. And we know scientifically what keeps milk production up. There's a lot of information, but sometimes we need to deviate from that and we need to do what I call a mental health day. And sometimes I meet with moms, do a consult, and I see what the issue is going on. I'm able to say, how about if we work out a system where you get a little bit more rest, we're going to do some pumping, we're going to do this, or, you know, whatever it is. And if we give her a mental health day to come back, sometimes we know that reducing how often a baby gets a synthetic bottle nipple is going to be better for that baby. But I take a position, if I have a mom that is absolutely stressed out, exhausted, nipples are cracked and bleeding, and she's in a position where if something doesn't intervene, we're just going to go straight to bottle feeding. And that might be formula. Let's just say that that's what we're going to do. This mom's contemplating. I'd rather see that baby get whatever she can pump. And if we need to supplement with formula for 24 hours or 48 hours and give her a reprieve and get things turned around where she can take a deep breath and go, okay, I think I've got this. This is a plan that can work. But sometimes have to work with mourning the loss of what we thought that breastfeeding relationship was going to look like.
Yeah.
And a good supportive professional can help her work through those things, because life isn't all rainbows and unicorns. And oftentimes I've had moms that have had beautiful births, non-medicated, and they're saying breastfeeding is more painful than a non-medicated delivery. And we need to step away and not go, yeah, but baby at breast needs, we need to listen to that and really honor what she's saying. Say, you know what? I hear you. Let's work out a plan. What works for you? What do you think is possible for you over the next 2 to 3 days? Come up with a realistic, livable plan that's going to work for that family unit.
Right. And It gets back to that shame too, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely.
Because then moms feel shame of, I said I was going to breastfeed my baby and I couldn't do it. Or I only breastfed for 6 weeks instead of I managed to breastfeed my baby for 6 weeks. And perhaps that's one of those moms. I heard this statistic from a lactation consultant recently that some women have to go back to work 2 weeks postpartum because of finances.
Yep.
That really undermines the breastfeeding relationship, especially if they have an employer that doesn't understand that she needs to pump. And we need to be kind to ourselves as mothers.
We need to be kind to one another in general. Yes. I have to tell you, some of these mom groups I'm on, the mom shaming is just
horrendous.
Sometimes I get myself out of the groups because it's just, I'm thinking, what have we come to as humans treating other humans? And, you know, the amazing thing is the research shows us a baby that goes to breast at delivery and gets one feed of mom's colostrum, never goes back to the breast again and has formula from that point off, medically, healthy-wise, that baby will outperform the baby that never got any of mom's milk at all and went straight to formula.
Wow.
So one time at the breast can be amazing for that being. Now, here's the other side of that. I'm adopted. I never had my mom cry to breastfeed because I was at birth taken away. So we also don't want to shame, right? We want to be careful. We're not shaming those mamas that adopt a baby or are in a situation or maybe have had past life traumas, abuses that just do not allow for that baby to come to breast at all.
Right. Or you know, I had a mama that had breast cancer. Uh-huh. And had to have her breasts removed.
Yeah.
And it was difficult for her because, oh, are you going to breastfeed? Are you going to breastfeed? And she didn't want to get into with perfect strangers. No, I can't breastfeed.
Yep. Uh-huh.
So I think that does add to the stress. All of these cultural expectations of, oh, you're starving your baby, or you didn't breastfeed. How come you didn't breastfeed? We just need to be kind and listen and be supportive. If your story can help someone and they're asking for help, share it. But if they're not, please don't. Please, please don't tell them. Oh, there's too much. I mean, that's kind of the whole point of my podcast is there's too many stories, too much shaming, too many you should do this and you should do that and this is right and so much polarized opinions out there. It's overwhelming sometimes.
Yes. And so once again, we go back to what is trusting your gut instinct? What is working well for you? What do you think is going to work for your family unit? The dynamics, who's going back to work? Who's available? Is it baby number four? Is it, you know, there's so many dynamics that can be present. Your emblem is B, the word B-E. And I'm in a season of my life where I'm really looking at how, what, why I do what I do. And the statement is, I'm not a human doing, I'm a human being.
Yes.
And as mothers, I mean, I can tell you when I'm a mother of five, when I brought my first child home a week later, I'm thinking I need to be in there scrubbing the bathrooms and doing all of that. And I had endured a forceps delivery, almost had a C-section, but avoided that. So I had a lot of lower recovering to do. And I look back now and I think nobody put that expectation on me but myself. Nobody was asking or telling me, get in there and clean the bathroom. I did that to myself. Why? Because for me, if I produced, if I did this, if I did that, then I was acceptable. And I think that's where I go back to, like when we started, when you asked me in the beginning of this podcast is, what causes? Where are we? And it's the stress, it's the expectation. So I'm looking at this beautiful logo that you have that says be. If we could just be and just be in acceptance that, you know what, I'm going to trust, I'm going to do what I need to do. Formula isn't going to kill my child. So if I have to use some of that, it's okay. If I'm able to exclusively breastfeed, it's okay. If we can learn to love ourselves where we are, that produces more love and peace and joy than anything else. if we're okay about the decisions that we need to make for ourselves.
Thank you for noticing my logo. That's why I chose it. How do you want to be? Who do you want to be in response to this?
I don't want to get too philosophical, but at the root of parenting, at the root of being a human being, we have to have some forms of thought patterns. Do we have toxic thinking going on, or are we really okay in a place of peace of, you know, I'll make the decisions I need to do. Yep. My in-laws or my outlaws, depending on what one might have. Yep. It might not be what they think, but it's okay. I'm doing what I need to do for me and my baby.
Right. Right. Listening to your baby as well. How often does that get trained out of us?
Yeah.
Oh, nope. You only feed every 2 to 3 hours. They've changed their philosophy, but there's a book out there that you probably know what I'm talking about. But initially it caused a lot of problems because they were like, nope, you only feed every 4 hours.
Uh-huh.
Well, if you're breastfeeding, babies need to feed more frequently. Uh-huh. And we need to create that relationship to listen to our child. Our child will lead us.
You know, we as an adult, right, we would be really super offended if we had dinner and we decided to run out of Target. And on the way by, we just had that hankering for that Frosty from Wendy's, right? And we go to the drive-thru and says, hey, can I take your order? And we say, yes, I'd like a medium-sized Frosty, please. And they'd say, oh, I'm sorry, Miss Smith. You're not scheduled to eat for another 2 hours. You ate dinner 2 hours ago. Please come back in 2 hours. We'd like to see you then. Thank you. I mean, we would be mortified as adults if that happened. But yeah,
so
that's
right.
What we do to babies. Babies,
right.
Metabolism, our metabolism. I think I tell women, when you're pregnant, were there not days that you felt like you ate, and there were days where you could go a lot longer without eating? A baby is no different. Their metabolism speeding up, slowing down. It's moving, the digestive tract. And for us to think that we're going to schedule and put this baby on this amount every time is actually doing the mother-baby diet a very much a disservice. Too, when I teach, I would tell people, you've got homework for the next day. I want you to get a note app or a piece of paper. And every time you put something to your mouth, I want you to do a hash mark. So, you know, you'd go 1, 2, 3, 4, and then cross through hash mark. You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, I want you to count. If you get a cup of coffee in the morning, that's one hash mark. If you go to work and you get another cup of coffee, there's one. If you go to the water cooler and get a drink, there's a hash mark. If you reach over and get a handful of nuts, there's a hash mark. And I guarantee them, by the time their 24 hours is up, they would have fed at least 10 to 12 times, if not more, in a 24-hour period. So really, our eating habits are really no different than a newborn. We've just reframed it in our head, and we don't see the connection. But a newborn feeds just as frequently as we. We think feed means full meal on. That's not a fair assessment. A baby can come to the breast in 5 minutes, get an ounce or two, and be completely satisfied, and that be a full feed for that baby. Babies love to be at mom's breastaurant, as I call it.
Yes.
Right? Yes. They love the ambiance. Hey, I love, can I just have another cappuccino? I just want to sip on it.
Right.
Different babies, different personalities.
Right.
If we just listen to the babies and trust our gut instinct as a mother, we would be a lot healthier, I think, in mental as well as physical state in this country.
I think so too. That's the beauty of a breastfeeding connection, because our very bodies, our very breasts remind us to reconnect with our child. And not that you can't reconnect with your child while you're bottle feeding, but our culture is so busy. Now it's discouraged, but when my brother was little, almost 50 years ago, he would prop a bottle. And now we're encouraging families, hold your baby instead of propping the bottle so that you have that connection. And for safety reasons too, then what's crossing my mind is that we're losing our family intimacy. We are learning to not trust ourselves. That we can't trust our children, that somebody else knows our baby better than we do. And not that we don't need help and guidance, because we do at times, but sometimes people present themselves as the expert or they know better. They may not know your child better than you do. They don't.
Right.
You know your child best.
I agree. I'm, you know.
Yeah. So before
I agree 100% to that statement.
So before we close out this interview, can you share the one tip that you really would like families that want to breastfeed or are breastfeeding some bit of wisdom to help through the stress or fear?
First of all, like we just said, absolutely trust your gut instinct. Trust that innate ability to parent your baby emotionally, physically, because it is a God-given thing that women have, partners, families, the unit has. Second of all, surround your people who in the breastfeeding arena that have successfully breastfed and are not judgmental. So if you find that when you're on Facebook and you're scrolling through a group and you get that pit in your stomach and it's continually, get off that group.
Yes.
Find your tribe that is your tribe. They call it tribe for a reason. You find your tribe. Find the group that works for you. Some groups are more militant. Some are more laid back. Find what works for you. If it's causing you duress, then it's not positive for you. If you are needing actual physical assessment, seek out a good lactation professional and pediatric office that can support you. The most innate wisdom that I can give is trust your gut. If you think something's not right, keep going. Don't listen to what people say. You do what you need to do to feel at peace for you and your baby.
I agree. So if someone would like to reach out to you, how could they do that?
They can access me via my website at childbirthconcierge.com. I know that usually in your podcast, you'll put that up. My number is available there. This podcast will go all over the country. If anybody ever feels they're not sure, they don't know how to find somebody and they have questions, you're more than welcome to call. If I feel that more than 10 minutes into the call that you really could benefit from a consultation and I feel it's something we could do via Zoom, I do Zoom consultations and wonderful. They're only $35. So they're very, you know, affordable.
Wow. That's wonderful. Yeah. I wish I had that 33 years ago. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, Zoom didn't. I don't think the internet existed.
No, it didn't. It didn't. It's kind of an irony of we have all this access to information and it's incredible and it's so helpful and I wish I had it. And in some ways, I think 33 years ago, we weren't as stressed out because there wasn't so much information.
It is definitely a dichotomy.
I appreciate you so much. Thank you once again, and thank you, families, for listening. As Kathy said, please trust your inner wisdom, listen to your baby, and find professionals that listen to you and want to help you find a solution that's right for you and your baby.
Cheers.
For more great conversations like these, or to find out more information and access Michelle's library of amazing guests, go to birthesservices.com/podcasts. For more information on the Birthes Method, Michelle's classes, meditations, and other services, go to birthesservices.com.